This is Corolla Digital.
Hi, I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week, on This Week with Larry Miller, we tell you three things we know for sure. One, Homer is Homer. Two, Pluto is a planet. And three, you can't fill up an Escalade. There are no groceries that will do it. Listen to us on iTunes or the free Adam Carolla app. We'll see you here.
Now, it's time for this week's CarCast with your host, Adam Carolla, and moderator Matt DeAndrea.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get it on. Mandate, get it on, and welcome to yet another CarCast. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for sharing it with a friend, spreading the good word around. That's Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea.
Hey.
Hey.
I'm excited. So I'm excited because tonight I'm going to see a screening of the movie Rush, the Ron Howard F1 film.
Oh.
That's going to be cool. Ooh. And Friday, I'm going to Fontana to drive McLarens.
Ah, that's exciting.
Yeah.
I'm
going to try to get a couple cameras from Jeff, and if I don't screw that up, Maybe we'll get some footage for an upcoming show. But I'm just going to drive McLaren MP12 4C Spiders.
Yeah, that'd be really bitchin'.
I don't think they're letting us go on the loop, you know, in Fontana, they're going to keep us on the infield.
How do they keep you on the infield without
cones. I'm sure they use a few cones and instructors and flagmen. And I probably won't go over 30 miles an hour, but it's going to be awesome either way.
But that's what I said. I said, you know, if you get up on the bank in that car, you'll be going 185.
Oh, yeah.
At the end of that straightaway. So they can't just have the road course, so to speak.
I drove a stock car around there, did about 145, and in a car that's so set up for that,
right?
Then you start to feel like, all right, I can go a lot faster now, and they won't let me. I can't imagine what the McLaren would be like up there. So I'm hoping maybe I'll be like, hey, you know, we got some cameras, we got a show to film.
Right.
Maybe we should open up the track a little bit.
You know, we're speaking to your demographic. You got a lot of people here with fat wallets. I'm going out tonight with Jimmy Kimmel and Carson Daly and James Baby Doll Dixon.
Oh, nice.
In town from New York City, everybody.
So, cousin
Sal, so we're just going to pad that bill.
So I was going to say, when everybody goes out with your agent, Dixon, does he pick up the check?
Oh, yeah, and Sal pads the check, cousin Sal, by adding more and more, like taking steaks to go and stuff like that.
He doesn't tell, the waitress, add an extra $200 on the bill, bring me back cash?
No, he just says, give me another bottle of Dom, and then he doesn't even drink champagne.
Yeah, put it on eBay.
And the waitresses are always in on it because they just want to pad the bill, so they don't give a shit. I've seen him take an $80 steak out with him and then throw it away, which I disagree with cosmically. But, it's always comical.
Yeah, he should bring that stuff here to the studio. There will be no shortage
of people on that. I'll see if we can work it out. Also, we got a really cool car out in the parking lot, which we'll take a little walk around.
You can do some racing this weekend?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Down at Coronado?
Yeah, I got Coronado.
As you're listening to this, Adam is on the track.
Yeah, except for I am doing a show with Dennis Prager tonight, if you're listening on a Saturday, and I'm doing that show in San Bernardino. I think we still have a few tickets left. You can go to adamcarolla.com if you want to check that out. And I'm doing a signing at Liquorama.
Yeah.
For Mangria, little
Mangria. Bottle sign. Buy some Mangria, get your bottle signed.
That's in Upland or something like that. We'll figure that out. Hey, Chris, fire up the big screen. I don't know if the big screen's up or running. I don't think it is. So we got to get a little pertinent information going on that. So you can come out and say hi.
Are you racing Saturday or Sunday or what?
Well, I'm doing what I sometimes do and, you know, shouldn't do, but I'm just coming out Sunday and racing because I can't.
So the driver meeting is out this time.
I may miss the driver's meeting. I think it'll be one of these situations where I drive out Sunday morning and just drive the race, start and last. Yeah. I don't think I'll qualify. And then Les will be crestfallen because Les candidate who does all the car prep, his plan in life is for me to quit my job, abandon my family, and go vintage car racing with him, except for I keep telling him, makes sense. I don't make any money.
Except for the money part.
Except for the money part. So I can't keep giving him money and keep buying tires and fuel if and I quit all my jobs.
Yeah.
And so his thing is always like, well, listen, just shoot on up to Coronado on, you know, Friday morning.
Down.
And shoot on down to Coronado, and then you can shoot on over to
Riverside,
and then you can hustle on back that night and do the, and I'm like, yeah, let me look into that. And I realized Coronado's 135 miles from where I live.
Yeah.
And the venue's like 140 miles from Coronado.
Yeah.
Like there's no halfway there
you
on
need a
the
helicopter.
Way. Or,
helicopter.
Trump-a-copter.
That's the way to do
Trump's
it.
Trump's helicopter, the Trump-a-copter, would be awesome. And then there's no more like shooting back and shooting over and sliding across. So I just realized, look, here's how it's going to be. This is a me and my son's event. He loves this event. We're going to have to pack it up, figure out who's going to pile in, and just hustle out Sunday morning.
Yeah.
Drive up there. I will do the practice Sunday morning, and then I will do the race on Sunday, I think about 12:30. And because the morning's a practice session, I won't qualify. I'll start in the back. Now, Les will have some cockamamie thing about, we got to get John Morton in the car to qualify.
And it's going to cost us $700.
No. I'll just start in the back, and I'll pick my way through the field and have a fun time driving
Did
a
you
Coronado.
Say, what are you driving, the 510?
510, because it's a big, I believe they're getting rid of the big Trans Am. I hear no big Trans Am category, but 2.5 Trans Am. So a lot of 2.5 cars.
Okay.
Out there, so that'll be fun. It kind of suck. Be nice to qualify, but I'll get the race in, and it's a great event.
Yeah.
And for those of you who haven't been to Coronado, it's at the Naval Base, and they do it on the airfield, and it's Fleet Week, I do believe.
So come out Sunday.
Yeah, come out, get a ticket for Saturday, Sunday. See a lot of good racing and a just cool environment and a sort of patriotic environment too. You see the battleships off in the distance.
Yeah.
And all that good stuff. So I will be with Prager and San Bernardino at the California Theater for the Performing Arts, and that's at 8 p.m. But at 6:30, I'm going to be doing a bottle signing at Upland and Liquorama. So you can come out and see that, and then see me in Coronado as well.
Yeah.
All right, so
cool.
Busy weekend.
I'm driving McLaren's. We're going to mention that one last time. I'm driving McLaren.
Doing two podcasts in Ventura coming up, too, on Tuesday if you want to come out.
Not this podcast. You're
the one
that pays the bills.
The good one, yeah. Jeff Probst is going to be there. Brad, uh-oh. I started saying Brad Garrett, but I'm
Brad Williams.
Brad Williams, the opposite of Brad Garrett, is going to be there as well. So come out and say hi. All right. Let's see. Where were we? We have your questions. We have a car today to walk around that a lot of you will like.
Yeah.
That is...
I like this car.
An up-and-comer that is in the sense that it's been slowly climbing in value over the last 10 years. Not meteoric, but very consistent. And
we've mentioned it a few times. We mentioned this car a few times recently.
Still in the realm of accessible to a lot of people if they're looking for, especially one that needs a little work, something they can get, a nice investment, a nice performer, looks good.
Yeah.
And it's got some European styling and a little American muscle.
You got to move now because I know for a fact there's two super hot rod builders that are debuting their version of this car at SEMA this year.
Right.
And that's going to change the
drive.
It's basically like a Gone in 60 Seconds movie ruining Mustangs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these guys are going to drive up the value.
All right. So we have some questions. We have some questions that have been emailed in. Elliot Riggs. What car got away from you? Maybe you sold it before you should have sold it and went higher or blah, blah, blah. I mean, you're always going to have, you're always going to have a car that you sell that's going to be worth more in some period of time because it's no different than a house.
Yeah.
You buy a house in the San Fernando Valley for $300,000. You sell it for $500,000 and you go, I did pretty good. And then 10 years goes by and the guy sold it for $900,000.
Yeah.
And you could kick yourself, but, or you just could never sell a thing. Yeah, That's kind of the nature of the beast.
And certainly long ago, like, you didn't know where cars would be like they are today. Like, you feel like you wouldn't make the same mistake today. Like, every car that my dad owned, I'm like, why'd you sell that? That was awesome. Why'd you sell that?
Right.
You know, he's like, oh, for $3,000, I bought my 65 GTO with the 389,
Right, and he bought it.
And he's like, I got married, had your dumb ass, and sold it. And I was like, you shouldn't have had me. You should have kept it.
Yeah. and he probably he sold it. A lot of times you sell stuff to buy other stuff. I don't sell that much stuff. One car I was thinking about recently is I had a really nice RSR 73 Porsche clone.
Yeah, I remember that car.
Really well done.
Yeah.
Beautifully done. And we were thinking about Magnus Walker.
Magnus.
Yeah. We're thinking about his car going for $300,000 over at the auction.
Yeah, more than that, I think.
$304,000 or $307,000 or whatever, but $300,000. And of course, he did a lot of really nice work on it. But this car had, you know, the steel flares, no oil cooler, and it was done very well.
Yeah, that was a cool car. I liked it.
At the time, the 911s, this is 4 or 5 years ago, just hadn't blown up. And at the time, the tribute cars or whatever really hadn't. Now, when I look at Magnus's car and I look at this car, I don't even see that big a difference. I mean, there's certain things that could be done to this car, and it wasn't not as nice as his. But I think I sold this car for like $30,000.
Right.
And I don't even know what it started life as. It could have started life as a 70E or 70S or whatever it was, but there's no doubt that this car would be $100,000 today, I think. I don't know what the
whether
clone...
it was the RS clone or not. I mean, it's a pretty valuable car now compared to it was. And this is only like 5 years ago.
The notion that 911s, no matter what you do to them, are still fetching a ton these days is interesting to me. Now, to be fair to me, I sold that. I sold an E30 BMW. I sold a bunch of sort of mid-level stuff because...
Also, when you were here, you sold the Dino, the 308 Dino, the boxy square 308 Dino, the yellow one.
Which haven't moved a nickel in price.
Right.
I don't
so
think.
You're okay on that one.
Well, you think the Dinos that are going for $400 now with the V6 in it, you think the ones with the V8 would go up just a little bit, but,
I know, but
not so
much.
You
can't change ugly.
Only the rear... part of it's ugly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
You know, but those Porsches that you were saying, like with guys like Magnus and Singer Porsche and what they're doing with cars, that it seems like it's almost becoming okay to take some of these old 911s and modify them a bit and create some value with them, like the hot rod market has been doing. You
right.
know, like what Bodie Stroud does and what Ring Brothers do to Mustangs and Camaros.
Right.
Like, give Bodie a 911, see what it comes back as.
That's
I bet that thing would be badass.
A much better platform than the, to me, than just a notchback Mustang or whatever he's working on. Yeah, the 911. So who knows what a really nice RSR clone is going for these days, but more than what I sold it for. But I sold everything and bought a Lamborghini. That's why I was selling everything.
Yeah.
But now the one that I really the car that I really love, it's my Eleanor. And that I was ready to get it and I was really excited about, and I've told the story before, but it was the BMW M1 art car.
Oh yeah.
And it was the Frank Stella car. And so
it's not the Frankie Muniz car.
I always knew about don't write that one down. I always knew about the BMW art cars, but I didn't know that much about them.
Right.
And I know like Andy Warhol did one, but it's like his assistant did it and then he signed it, you know, and he just slopped paint all over it. Like it didn't look that good. And I didn't even know who John Stella was.
Right.
So I started looking up pictures of that he had, John Stella. And so it was one of these things where I was like, okay, so you have to picture this story. I don't have the money for this car, but that never stopped me from buying a car. I'll buy it and then I'll figure it out afterward.
Right.
So I did this. So I said, first off, how old is Frank Stella? Is he still alive? And they're like, yeah, he's still alive. He's like 80. And I was like, wow, that's old. And he's like, yeah. And then I started seeing some of his pictures at auction, like small, like 18 by 18 inch pictures, mm-hmm. the 24 inch pictures. Oh, that one went for $3.7 million. So I was like, the guy's still alive.
Yeah.
He's selling selling paintings for $3 or $4 million, at least what I could find online. And he's old.
Yeah.
And this is an art car that he painted himself. And it's an M1 Pro car. And so then I was like, where's it coming from? The Guggenheim? I was like, it's been parked at the Guggenheim? Yeah. And I was like, holy shit. And so then I got hold of the company that's in like North Carolina or whatever that was in charge of refurbishing the car mechanically or mm-hmm. whatever. And they're like, new motor, new brakes, new transmission, new everything. Like,
done. It's all done.
We went through everything. This car is rock solid mechanically.
Yeah.
So so I was like, okay, all right. So now I'm like, all right, we have this art car. There's in terms of pro cars, art cars, there's probably three in the world, four in the world. This is a real one.
Yeah.
It was painted by a guy who's still alive, but he's old. His paintings are going for millions of dollars.
And it's an M1. Like, the M1's a badass car to begin with. The M1 pro cars are even cooler.
Right.
And now it's like one of four.
One of three or four, right. So I call the guys over at Bonham, and I go, hey, this M1, this pro car over here with Frank Stella, you guys have an estimate of 450 to 600. And you know, as far as I can tell, a BMW pro car sells for 500, maybe 550.
Yeah, that's about right. I think that's right.
Why is the art car the same price as a pro car?
Yeah.
There's a lot of pro cars
like,
floating
around.
It's got
this funky paint on it. You can't drive it. You can't do anything with it.
And I was like, holy shit. And the guy, the motherfucker from Bonham, he was like, yeah, it says 450 to 6, but I'd be surprised if we got to 4. And I was like, what?
You're fired.
What?
You don't know shit about cars.
It's going to sell for cheaper than just a pro car, an art car from a famous guy who's still alive, whose paintings are selling for millions of dollars. It was at the Guggenheim.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit. So I said, I don't have a job. I don't have any money, but I'm going to get this fucking car because if I can get this car for 450 or 425 or whatever, 475 or whatever it is, then it's going to be worth $2 million in 5 years or whatever. So I was like, I got to get this car. So I also was racing at that time. I was racing the Roadster, mm-hmm. I think. So, but before we went over, we went to the Bonham. We went to the auction at the Quail. Yeah, the Quail, Chris. And we went, and the thing was parked. The way they do them is they do it like sort of on a golf course. But this thing was parked in the back up a dirt hill.
Yeah.
Like it was a little like up a gravelly dirt hill. And it was
that's where they put all the junk.
It was covered in dust. It's covered in like dirt and dust. And I was, and it was going off like at noon on Friday. And no one was standing around the car or anything. And I like walked up to it and I was like looking at it. And I'm like,
the stars are aligning. Sounds like it.
God, this thing's going off in the middle of the day and it's on Friday and the guy doesn't think it's going to go for anything. And so I left Gutierrez behind. He's a guy, he's a car dealer friend of ours.
Yeah.
And I put him on the phone and I said, listen, I'm going to the track because I got to do a qualifying race. But when that thing comes, it's coming early. It's coming like 5 or 6 or 7 or something. And like I said, during the day, they save the big ones. You know, that one's not a big nighttime auction, but they usually don't go that early. So I got him on the phone and I'm like at the track and I'm like, all right, where are we at? And he's like, it's at 300. Okay.
Get that paddle up.
It's at 400 now.
Get that paddle up.
It's at 500.
Still get that paddle up.
It's at 600. It's at 700. it's at 800. And I'm like, oh, shit. It ended up going for like 50, 60 or yeah. whatever. And then, you know, when you do the buyer's premium and the tax and whatever, you're now yeah. over $1 million. And I was just like, all right, first off, I knew that.
Yeah.
I knew when I saw
they got you so excited about it, didn't they?
I saw 450 to 600. I was like, no way. No way, no way. It went for $854.
$854.
To an anonymous bidder. Fucking phone.
Yeah.
Some cheat.
I wasn't at that event, but I remember you calling and you were bummed about it. You're like, that fucking car went for $850. But you were bummed because you're like, they could have just said it was $850. You thought it was going to be $850. You kind of knew it was going to be $850, but they got you all excited about $400.
Yes.
Now, sitting here today, would you have paid $850 for it?
If I had $850, I would have, because I am absolutely convinced that car is going to go well over $1 million. If it isn't, the next time somebody sells it,
it's not going to be for $850.
Yeah, it's not going to be for $850. And by the way, it just Garden Variety Pro car will be $850 yeah. in 3 years anyway.
Would you buy that car today for $1 million?
I probably would if I had $1 million, or if I sold something or did something. What I was planning to do with yeah. that car was I was going to buy that car. I was going to take off all of the fiberglass fenders, hood, all that deck lid, all that shit.
Yeah.
I was going to then have the new body panels repainted and recreated in the Stella artwork form,
yeah,
and then go out and race it and hope I didn't roll it.
Yeah. You know how awesome it would be to see the art car on the track?
That's what you would have seen.
That would have been amazing.
That would have been awesome.
Yeah, we would have hung the body up on a wall here somewhere.
Right.
Put it in a big glass case.
Right. Right. And yeah.
So you'd have to sell, you know, a Mira, a 400 GT, a couple of the collected Lamborghinis.
I don't know what I would have done, but I would have done something.
Yeah.
And if the owner wants to contact me, he knows where to find me.
Yeah. Let's call that guy up. Who needs four Lamborghinis?
It's just one of those things where the point is this. You always know. It's sad, but you always know. Like when you say, "What?" Huh? I mean, whether you see the flyer where the guy says, "We'll clean any three rooms, we'll clean the carpet of any three rooms plus the entry hall for $14.99," and you go, "Huh? $14.99 to clean three rooms, any size, and the entry? Huh?" Whenever you go in life, whenever you go, "Huh?" Trust it. Even when you're talking to the expert guy from Bonham with the English accent who's yeah. explaining to you, we don't think it's going to get that much. Yeah. We think maybe $400 to $450.
It wasn't like, American dollars. He was off. He didn't know.
Yeah. He was on Cougarans. Whatever it was. Even talking to the guy who's auctioning the car off, yeah. I still knew, no, it can't be. How could this art car be cheaper than a regular car or the same price? And Frank Stella's shit is expensive.
That guy should be selling used cars in Sun Valley right now.
Ugh.
He does not get car yeah. valuations.
He'll drop the fake accent, believe yeah. you me. So it got me fucking fired up, and then it all went up. And like I said, it's sitting in a dusty, parked halfway up a hill in a dusty lot, yeah. and nobody standing around it. It just looks so lonely and so dusty and so forgotten about. I was like, oh, this thing may go for $375 or something insane, you know, and no such luck. All right, and I love those. I like those pro cars anyway, just for the
every
fuck
time
of
you
it.
Race against them and they're in front of you.
Well, to be fair to them, they always start in front of me. I just don't pass them.
They're just such good-looking cars on the track. They yeah. sound great. They look great. I mean, they just really stand out all the time. They're really cool cars. So after you listen to the show, Google that car and see the photo. Actually, maybe we'll put up a photo. We'll put some photos up on our Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Check that out.
Let's see. Somebody wants to know about Frank, not Stella, wants to know about the new M4, no more M3. Yeah. I don't even know about the M4.
Okay, so what they're doing, BMW is taking their coupes, the 3 Series coupe and the 3 Series sedans. Mm-hmm. They're dividing them into 3 Series are going to be the sedans, 4 Series are the coupes.
But is the platform going to be the same?
It's still essentially the same car. I'm sure they're going to make some little changes, but they're designating it now. Because you know how, like, you have the 5 Series as the right. 4-door and the 6 Series is the 2-door?
Right, but you can get a 4-door 3 Series.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Well, no, the 3 Series will be the 4-door, and the 4 Series will be the new 2-door. So the new M
will be an M4. But you'll also be able to get a 4 Series with a straight 6 in it or whatever.
Yes, it'll right, just be the right. coupe. So they're basically trying to separate. You're not going to get like a 5 Series coupe or sedan or a 3 Series
right,
coupe
right.
or sedan. It's each series is going to have its own designation. So the question is there a real legacy with the M3 brand? Is the new line of M4 cars, you think that's going to make much of a difference?
I think everybody has a version of an M3 now. In the sense that back in the day, it was a real novelty, the M3 and then the M5. It was like, wow, somebody's taken one of these sophisticated German Autobahn machines and really got some horsepower out of them. And it was there was just nothing else like it,
yeah.
you know. And it was always the gold standard in performance sedans. Now, of course, Audi's come around and done things, and Mercedes has come around and done things. But even some Japanese companies have come around and done things,
yeah.
you know, Lexus and stuff like that, and Infiniti. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like everybody has a mid-size something with some power plant that's making 400-plus horsepower shoehorned into it
yeah.
that is going 0 to 60 in, you know, sub-mid-fives.
Yeah.
And so the M stuff, while it's insanely bitchin', and you love BMW, and that new M5's insane,
yeah.
and so on and so forth, you take a look, and it's like you're on the fucking world's best beach, and you're just standing there in Rio, and some hot chick goes buying a thong back with a D cup, and you go, whoa, wow, look at that. And then all of a sudden, her friend comes walking by, and you go, oh, shit, look at that. And then you look down, and there's a chick laying on a towel, and you go, what about her? And now everybody. It's not the right. novelty anymore. I mean, I would take anything Audi had to offer in that was, like, I would go to whoever, Lexus, Infiniti, Audi, Mercedes, whoever, and go, show me whatever's competing with the M3, the M5, the M4,
yeah.
show it to me, and I'm sure I'd be very happy
oh, yeah,
in that
yeah,
car.
Yeah. Like an S4,
yeah,
and an RS6, the RS5, which is the
yeah,
coupe.
and it used to be yeah. that it was sort of M5 or yeah. nothing, M3
so,
or nothing.
So really the naming's not going to make much of a difference. It's not going to make a difference to me. You roll up in a 3 Series, roll up in a 4 Series, I'm just going to know the difference between 2 doors and 4 doors.
Right.
So, I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. I don't think it's going to change the value of the older cars. If anything, it's just going to make it a little bit easier to understand whether you got a 4-door or a 2-door.
Jeffrey Tilmo wants to know which carbs I prefer on my Datsuns. Do I like the SUs, the Webers, the Makunis, or something else? I'm a Holley man.
Yeah. yeah.
I have some really cool SUs that were totally redone and totally modified for the Roadster. And it was one of my battles I had to do with Les because the car, as originally raced, had these like single barrel SUs with these big trumpets on them. And they were really cool, but they just didn't work that well on the car. And so I said, let's get some Makuni 44s and toss them on here and see if we can be competitive in
yeah.
this car. And we battled back and forth with if we can make these work and all that kind of stuff. So, and I don't know why, but I think and Weber's good too, obviously. But the Makunis, I think the Makunis seem to work the best on the Datsun stuff, and that's the stuff I work. Now, if you're,
but you only really race, you know. So like,
right.
all you got to do is start it and then go flat out for the
yeah,
most
yeah.
part.
They don't work in trying to get out of the pits or anything like that.
Right,
like, that's a disaster.
And you should be clear about that in your question. Is just know that. You know, what you're using is mostly for racing.
That's
not a street car.
If you're going to shift it 8,000 every single time, that's what's good. But
right.
it's no good they're not any good under 3,000. Like, there's a lot of blah, 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 blah. So if you're driving around the streets, you might want some SUs on there because they might be better at the lower RPM. Mm-hmm. My stuff is all over jetted and oversized for all the sort of top end stuff. So very good point. But no, whatever works on your car is going to work. And like, you know, the Weber is good for the aforementioned Porsche and the triple choke downdraft stuff. You know, the triples also on the Muras, they use the triple chokes as well.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think what other car. I don't think there's any other car that uses a three barrel. To figure that one out.
I don't know. I just assume fuel inject everything, get it dialed in with a laptop.
Right, right. All right, let's see.
Let's look at Carl's questions here. Carl has, he's saying, does a 370Z or a 5-liter Mustang make a better daily driver or a weekend car? You know, and my opinion on this is both the cars I like. Both cars are rear-wheel drive. Both you can get with a manual transmission, which I know that sounds silly, but so many cars today you can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I would choose the Mustang, not just because I'm more of a Mustang guy. It's like, you know, we had the 370Z here, and it felt a little light on the inside, you know, like a lot of plastic, you know, lightweight doors, not really, you know, not really a lot of heft to it. And whereas the Mustang, I felt like the newer Mustangs, they certainly, the new 5-liter Mustang stepped up with the soft touch plastic, and it's got that nice V8 kind of rumble to it. And certainly the 370, actually the 350 that you used to have, Adam, is a better sounding engine than the 370Z, even though the 370 has more power. And I'm saying if you're going to tool around in a car that you want to have some fun with, especially just on the weekends, you kind of like that sound and that rumble, and I think that the Mustang provides that.
Well, you're not going to go wrong with either one. I will say this about the Z. The Z is a little tough getting in and out of.
Yeah.
It's a car that I don't know how old you are, and I don't know how much around town you're going to be doing with it. But at a certain point, when a car becomes a little bit of a pain in the ass to get in and out of, it does affect your quality of life. And the Z is just the way it's put together.
Yeah.
And the way it's sort of low slung and stuff, it's a little tough getting in and out of that car. I would say this is a tie. It comes down to personal taste, and you buy the one, the best example of either one you can find the best deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely go for the best deal. But you know, the 370Z with the 6-cylinder, good horsepower, 6-cylinder, you know, there was certainly not that long ago where, you know, you'd buy that car and be like, you know what, it's cool, it feels refined, and you're probably going to get better gas mileage. Take a look at the new Mustangs with the 5-liter engines. I don't know that the Z is getting better gas mileage.
Well, not the way you drive it, especially if you try to wring it out a little bit. You know what I mean? Because that car's lower displacement. 3.7, I guess, going to make the horsepower the higher end. Jacob wants to know, why do I dislike Jeeps?
We live in L.A.
Couple things. We live in L.A., number one. Number two, me and Mike August, like, rented, like, a Jeep Compass or something in, like, Detroit. And I was just staring at the handles, just the plastic door handles on the thing, the sort of super pity, chalky plastic door handles, and I was getting angry. Like, I was like, this what year is it, Mike? It's like 2012. I was like, what are we doing here? This is part of the big comeback? This is what the bailout was about? Like, and we got inside this car, and it was just such a piece of shit. And like, you know, the fit, the finish, the gauges, that just, you know, just look, at a certain point, you know, we're car guys, but we're first human beings.
Speak for yourself.
And you just sit in something and you go, I don't need to be a car expert to know I'm sitting in a piece of shit. I can feel the way the door feels when I close it. I can feel the handle in my hand. You know what I mean? It's like holding a good tool. You know, you go down to Home Depot, you hold a Milwaukee right angle, you know, half inch drill motor or something. Mm-hmm. You hold... you hold a Hitachi, whatever. You hold Bosch, you know, and a belt sander or something. You feel it in your hand, and then you go to the $19 shit and you put it in your hand. It just feels light. It feels cheap. You go Mac tools versus just some cheap ass shit you get at the Pep Boys, and it just feels different in your hand. You don't have to be a mechanic. No, you can be a human being.
You know the quality. I mean, you know the quality. In a car, especially, it doesn't feel safe. Like when you close a door and you hear an echo, like a teeny echo.
Yeah. Now here's the thing. The new Jeep Cherokee seems pretty good to me.
The Grand Cherokee and the SRT, not just the SRT8, but the new Grand Cherokee seems really nice. Stepped up the interior.
Right. You know, but now you're kind of paying for it. Yeah. I mean, to me, and of course the old Jeep, look, the one that won us World War II, obviously I'm fine with that. I just feel like it's an iconic company. They've been through their ups and their downs. It's, you know, 2012 or 2010 when the Compass came out, or 11 or whatever it is. Yeah. And they should know better by now. Like, just get a fucking door handle that looks like it belongs in today's, you know, this isn't. When you guys were getting yourself into trouble in the 70s, it was for this kind of behavior. Knock it off.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Yeah, I think they're getting better. But the Jeep in an off-road market.
Liberty.
Yeah. You know, like the Jeep Wrangler in an off-road market. There are a few things better off-road for the money than something like that. But again, we live in L.A. The most off-roading we do is the sidewalks.
What's the fascination with 70s era? This is Sheldon Gooby. IMSA. IMSA cars and drivers. Do you follow any of the more current GT series? American or European. I watch the American Le Mans series. I watch some of our friends who've been in this studio come in here. I think Andy Pilgrim and
Jack Baldwin was just in.
I watched him.
Tommy Kendall, he's back in a car.
I saw Jack get himself spun out on basically turn one or two of Sonoma the other week on there, and watch all those guys bash the shit out of each other. So I like the road racing. I follow the road racing. I just, you know, look, to me, the cars are sort of like, you know, you guys are and I am and everyone else is with the Playboys. You know, you got your sweet spot. And when I go out to those vintage races,
the Harry Bush of car racing.
That's right. The vintage race has stuff that goes from chitty chitty bang bang to, really, that's a vintage car? Yeah, it's a 1996 GTP, you know, whatever. And you're like, it doesn't look vintage.
Yeah,
it looks
new. Like, there's like Jay Leno vintage cars that he's into, and then there's the vintage race
right
cars,
and you know? So you go right on through, and for me, when I see that stuff in the mid 70s, early 70s, that's where I sort of stop and I go, I like that, you know, that you know,
so, but you're attracted to both the style of those cars and then the history of those cars.
Yeah,
right, because those are the cars that you sort of grew up on. Those are the names and the racers that you've seen. Those are the cars that, you know, it's just your generation of cars that you grew up with.
Yeah,
and now,
but you know, I would say this too, because people do it all the time, where they go, well, that's what you're used to. You know what I mean? Like, people say all the time, they go, look, you only like that music. You like John Hiatt and Graham Parker and Elvis Costello and Joe Jack. You like those guys because you were in high school listening to that stuff. It was influential to you. That's what you listened to in high school. And you like that car and those cars because that was in your sweet spot, like back when when your brain was mush and it hadn't dried yet, you know, and it was still your formidable years and blah, blah, blah. And I go, well, let me say this. I hate the architecture from 1980 and 1980. I don't know, the fucking shit boxes with the aluminum windows and the flat roofs with the bad stucco with the super sandy sponge finish on it. No, my architecture is from the 20s.
Yeah.
I love the Art Deco stuff from the 30s. I love the stuff from, you know, Pasadena and, you know, the houses from the 1916, 1917s, you know, or the post and beam stuff from the 50s, you know, with the wide open floor plan. So, no, I hate that architecture. And I don't think it's as easy to go, well, you just like that music. No, if you listen to Elvis Costello and Graham Parker and Joe Jackson, it's better than listening to a lot of the shit that's out today, or certainly a lot of the shit that was out like in the late 80s, early 90s, Men Without Hats, Flock of Seagulls. Those fucking bands sucked. So it's not just about when you graduated high school. You know, I think you take a look at that aforementioned M1 Pro car, or you take a look at the BMW Batmobile, like 75, 3.5 or something, and you go, wow, that's a fucking bitchin' piece. Uh-huh. I mean, it's like when you look at the F1 cars from mid-70s, late-70s, huge barrel back tires and minus all the electric, you know, all the crazy wind tunnel computer and shit like that. You look at one of those cars, one of those Elf cars or John Player specials from like 1976, they do look cooler.
They do.
The new stuff today.
And I like the BMW M1 Pro car is one of my favorite, let's call it vintage racing cars out there. But also, I really like Tommy Kendall's Trans Am Mustang. I don't remember what year that was that he was racing that. But to me, that's a cool
85, 86, 87 or something, 88 or something. And that's cool, too. But the one that Parnelli Jones was driving in 71, to me, is like just a little bit cooler.
Okay. Yeah.
And with the school bus yellow one. And then the other thing, too, is like I said, like, the new stuff. Like, you take a look. You show me a 7980 Porsche 935, like that Momo car that was in my race, or Bruce Canepa's car or something like that. Yeah. And I take a look at that car, and then I take a look at a modern 911, like, cup car, and I like Bruce's better. I just think it's – now, some of it's regulations. You couldn't run barrels in the back, and some of it's like safety and shit like that. But I just think the car from 79 looks cooler than the one from 2013. The one from 2013 looks cool, too.
Yeah.
I just like this one a little bit better. That's all. Okay. All right. We got a car out in the parking lot, and we've given you a couple hints on it. I think you've had enough. By the way, the eBay blog this week, Bury Me at the Quail. I think Chris Maxipata would definitely agree on that one, right? Chris.
Yeah.
Seeing how you probably won't be with the company this time next year.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he could have moved on to something.
You know. Where is he going to go? Well, he has I'm to be saying, here. He's a minority.
It's not carved in stone that he's going to get fired. I'm just saying. It's a possibility. But you're not here next year. Let's just let's just call it what it is.
All right.
Would you still go to the Quail?
Absolutely.
That's the thing. That's how good it is. That's how good the Quail is. So Bury Me at the Quail is the blog, and it's it'll tell you all about really the best $400 you'll ever spend in your life.
Oh yeah. And you got to start figuring that out now. It turns out they turn people away. You can't just buy a ticket.
Yeah.
There's limited tickets.
And I also got to figure out what other cars they're one of mine. Because they had a Newman car. They had my Newman car the year before last.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Well, look, as long as you keep getting cars invited there, I will not be hungry that weekend.
That's right. All right. You want to sue? It's the eBay Motors blog, and you go to eBay Motors, and you use the app, and you look at all the super cool crap, and you buy all the parts. And like I said, I just peruse. I'm just looking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I bought a buddy's car outside. I got a 2001 Volkswagen Jetta. It's a Wolfsburg edition. It's a little commuter car. I bought it for like $1,000. Went on eBay, bought all the parts that I needed to get it to run.
Right.
I'm into the car for a couple grand. It's fine.
That's all you need, baby. Yeah. eBay. Yeah. And you want to support the show, you go through Amazon, you go to our website, you go through PayPal, it gives us a couple of bucks. We go out vintage racing. It costs a lot. But we put the cameras in the car, and then we come back and we show you what we've done.
Yeah.
And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but support us and we can keep doing it for you. Also, a little social media.
Follow us on Twitter, of course, so you can get an update of what we're going on. But check us out on Facebook as well, because we're putting up pictures there not once a week. It's going on all the time. You can see tons of the galleries, the cars that we're putting together. It's facebook.com/carcastshow.
All right. We'll take a quick break, step out the parking lot, take a look at a really cool car. David Houston, I love this Pantera GTS. Tell us all about it.
Well, it's a 1974, the only year Pantera produced the GTS. In Europe, they had GTSs 72 on, but the American GTS was 1974. They made 98 of them, and this is one of them.
I love it, and I'll tell you what I love about it. Panteras can be a little bit plain Jane, like they're just white with the black interior. And if you don't touch them, they're a little plain Jane. And the problem is then guys start to touch them, and they don't just stop touching them.
Overboard with the wings and the body kit. Too much.
Cavity search.
I remember
those
your
things.
Quote. I like Panteras. I don't like Pantera owners.
I don't like what they do
to Panteras.
I said
that about Ferrari owners. Yeah.
But I do have to say that the, you know, like I said, the base Pantera, unmolested, is a simple car. It's a nice car, but it is a little like, I want to see some flares. Yeah, I want to see a two-tone hood. I want to see a cooler front bumper. And the thing that's great about this GTS is it has those little touches that make a car a sports car without all the crazy triple chrome, you know, jet boat headers hanging out of the back of the thing.
Right.
How much work did you put into this, or did you buy it like this?
Well, I bought it off the original owner, Dr. Keevy out of Buffalo, New York. He owned it. He got old. I mean, I'm sort of old, and it's hard to drive. I can imagine being really old and having to drive this thing. So he sold it. It was a rust-free car. It was all the original stuff was there. And it's one of the, it's like what you talk about, Adam, like you go into the shop, like, you know, let's you know, just clean everything up, and then you clean up one thing, and it's like doing your kitchen. You do your kitchen, then you got to do the bedroom, you got to do everything next to it. And it ended up being this two-year, completely everything apart, then put it back together, so now it's completely restored. Not that it looks exactly like it did when I bought it, basically, but now I have 100,000 extra into it.
I don't know if this is all Panteras, but the chrome is blacked out.
That's a GTS thing.
The hood is a great sort of charcoal anthracite color. It looks great. This color, which is not red and it's not pink and it's not purple, just looks right. As I was saying off camera to David, that the Mura Jalpa it was, the race one that I saw at Bob Loft said the exact same thing. The fenders look great. Anyone who's a 510 fan recognizes, or Z fan, loves some, I'm guessing, fiberglass.
Yep.
Fenders that are flared.
With rivets.
Which
I love.
Which put on and that are black. And interior, always loved the Pantera interior, loved the gauge clusters, loved that. That's the gated shift. That's where the European part really kicks in. What's going on with the front bumper? Because that feels a little bit different as well.
Well, the federal crash test rules started coming in 73 and 4. Mm-hmm. So the original Panteras have this very, very beautiful little chrome bumper at here, which makes the car feel shorter, and it's just really tight. And then, of course, in 73, you got this ridiculous bumper.
But this looks good on this car.
Well,
it definitely works with this color combination. That's what makes it really kind of work.
But it just extends, you know, the car's actually tighter than it looks because of this bumper. And the chrome ones that they had in 71 and 2 are just really nice. But this is the original, so you got to have it.
351 Cleveland in this.
Yes.
And it's got the 4-barrel on top.
Yeah.
And made you breathe on it a little bit?
Well, the only thing that's changed from when this thing rolled off the factory floor is I have an Edelbrock carburetor on it, because the factory carburetor, I sent it out, had it done, put it on, the car will not run with the original carburetor.
Sure, why?
Off it comes. Kind of the way it was when it was
right. Yeah, exactly. So off it comes, Edelbrock goes on, and now it runs. It runs.
I will say this about the Pantera, and I've always said it, and I remember very early on, I had a friend whose dad was a big time like divorce attorney and used to work for Galpin Ford or one of the Ford dealerships, and they would essentially just pay him by giving him a Ford every year. And he had a Pantera back when Panteras were new. And the one thing I couldn't get over, because it didn't exist in the automotive world, even the high-performance automotive world back then, was the exhaust. Now, some 40 years later, and it's really just been the last few years where guys have given a shit about what the exhaust looks like on a performance car. Yeah. The big four, you know, big quad, 3-inch, whatever, hanging out the back. Right. I remember like in the late 70s, like going, whoa,
yeah, yeah.
Look at that. Because back then, you know, even Porsche just had like the one little downspout, you know,
right,
going off
right,
the side.
Right.
Nobody had anything that looked worth a damn. But the Pantera, definitely the tip of the spear and the badass exhaust, right?
Yeah.
Or maybe you give the Cobra 427 the first.
Well, this, you know, in many ways, this car was really, you know, state of the art. It was like the McLaren 12C of its time. So you have a monocoque body,
right?
You've got independent suspension, you've got disc brakes all around, you've got a 5-speed transmission.
The CF transmission.
Yeah, which
right.
is out of the Ford GT before. It's the same one they put in the Ford GTs in the 60s.
Right.
You know, so you've got a lot of these, you know, what was cutting edge performance stuff at the time. So.
Right. And, mid-engine.
Had electric windows, which was a big deal. You know, think of a performance car in the early 70s with electric windows. None
yeah,
of them had
right. windows.
Yeah.
Those are for the rich.
Yeah.
You want to fire
Let's
it up?
Let's fire it up.
Sure.
Let's take
if
a
it'll
look
start, which is always questionable.
Well, with that carburetor, with that Edelbrock carb on there. I love this spare tire. Check this thing out.
Did that come with
the
car?
It's basically like a bunch of rubber bands around a rim.
Right. Well, seen a little smoke. Uh-huh.
So close.
So close.
So close.
Okay, here we go.
There it is. Wow.
It's got a little rum to it at an idle.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's
wow,
it's got
great.
The, you know, these, the GTSs had factory headers on them too, which is
oh really, and the deck lid, steel,
yeah,
and the hood steel.
Yeah,
as well, and
yeah,
out? the best part is should I,
oh no, just you can come, you can grab that in there and hold
the whole
roll.
Thing
yeah,
comes
just
out,
just bring the whole thing out.
There you go. Yeah, the ZF tranny looks great. In this car.
That's where all the magic happens.
And it looks like we have a tranny cooler back mm-hmm. here, I'm
it's like
guessing.
Every car show you go to, they don't put that back there at all, and everything's just polished out
right,
to the T.
Right.
And it's just too much. Like, you don't need to do all that. This is the way I think it should look. This looks amazing.
Yeah.
It is. Sounds great, too.
And looks like you got some fresh air conditioning in here.
Yeah, you know, I haven't there. Turned it on because the car runs hot. One of the big problems with the Pantera is...
Sure.
Because they overheat. So I never turn it on, and you know I'm trying to drive around in fifth gear all the time, move as fast. I mean, when I get trouble, you start panicky when you're in traffic. You're like, oh no, yeah. It's going to do it. It's
going
to do it.
Keep going. Keep going.
Please, for the love of
There's
God,
There's
going
to be a real traffic jam if you don't start moving. Yeah.
But this is the way to do a Pantera, and this Pantera is just unique enough. And under 100 examples, mm-hmm. this is a really, really nice example. But again, it's great because you can. Hydraulic clutch, I can see there. You can put it back to just how it was and be sporty enough without getting in with the Sawzall and doing all the hack stuff that all the guys do when we see them at the Ferrari shows. This car came in this color, which is called what?
It's this maroonish color. It had the GTS.
Maroonish.
Yeah. And it had the GTSs were three colors. You had a silver one. You had this maroony thingy, and then you had a yellow one.
I think I've only seen the silver thus far, and maybe the yellow. But this is really a grabber. Really looks fantastic. All right, David Houston. I know you got some cool restaurants. Barney's Beanery is one of them. You can get Mangria. At Barney's
That's
Beanery,
right.
by
oh, yeah.
the way.
Is we were one of the first, by the way. We were keeping the faith long before you got all these
That's
distributors.
Right.
Before Canada came online and blew the whole place up.
Our first event ever was, right. at, right. was at Barney's Beanery.
Exactly.
But how many Barney's Beaneries are there now?
There's five. We're opening a sixth one in Redondo. But if you want to come by and get some OG Mangria, we're the place to do it.
That's right. The original kegs, the original oak charred kegs were sent out to Barney's
right.
Beanery.
Throw out the website as well.
Barney'sBeanery.com.
Excellent.
All right. So, until next time. This is Adam Carolla for Matt, the Motorator, DeAndrea, and David Houston saying, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.